This episode of the SL Cabinet contains discussions of sexual assault, which may be offensive to some listeners. Dumelang Thobela, hello, and welcome to this week's news wrap brought to you by the SL Cabinet. I'm your host today, Gwena Mashale, and I'm only joined today by my colleague Herman Malloy. Nandi's out sick. Herman, say hi.
Hi.
So we are the youth of today, bringing you all things new and current affairs through our eyes. I hope you stick with us as we look at the week's bio stories and look at the controversies, laugh about the weird ones. So let's get comfortable and dive right in. So Nandi earlier in the week worked on a story about a 15-year-old serial rapist. So the discussion in the newsroom was that could this be our youngest rapist ever in the country, right?
Our youngest
Thabo Bester. So I mean, it's not funny, Herman, but to move on. But here's the thing, so we like did a little bit of research to try and actually get an actual definitive answer, and we found that he might actually be the youngest serial killer, because of the fact that the last time there was a recorded young serial killer was when this guy committed the crimes when he was 15. So this 15-year-old serial killer, currently he committed the crimes when he was just 12. So first of all, he lures the victims by either grabbing something of that is vulnerable or that is something of theirs, runs away, and obviously the victims run after it to try to get it, and he corners them and he unfortunately rapes them. Yes. And this, what's funny is that the first time he was caught, and instead of obviously because of the fact that he's a minor, the police said we can't really do much, so we have to take him to social worker. So the social worker spoke to him and he confessed and told the social worker, yeah, I raped this girl. Then the second time it happened, again, he told the social worker, yes, I tried to rape her. And then again, the third time, he told the social worker, yes, I raped him. Yeah. And the social worker's like, okay, yeah, we've had enough.
That's getting way too much. I mean, the other thing with it, it's the fact that it was not just girls.
Mm.
He was all very over diverse. The place.
He was not discriminating against anyone.
It's a sad story to think about it. I mean, we know we can't delve deep into the kind of family he's brought up from, and everything, because sometimes we don't have to blame parents.
Yeah.
People choose their lifestyle from the early age.
Mm.
We might argue to say it does not fall far from the tree or whatever the case might be, but then sometimes people take their own decisions.
No, I get that. My question now is the fact that, like, how does now our law system work? Because apparently the current laws, Unandi was speaking to the investigating officer, and he says that, and also a criminology expert is that, she basically said that, no, a juvenile is only considered a juvenile at the age of 14 going up.
Yes.
But, and below that, the law cannot prosecute this person, because it's that whole thing. Does this person have the capacity to discern from right or wrong?
Yeah.
But my thing is, this child, for the first time, he confessed and told the social worker, yes, I did this.
Hmm.
The second time, he told the social worker, yes, I did this. And the third time again, he said, yes, I did it. So clearly for me, it was a matter that he could be able to tell.
He was aware
what he was doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. And obviously the law says if the prosecutor can prove that this child is aware of what he's doing wrong. So those are the dynamics that I think about. It can, as a prosecutor myself, as an MPA, can I go forward in the courts and say, this child knew what he was doing was wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I think I can pull up the social worker and say, during your conversations, did this child not look like he was aware what he was doing was wrong? You understand my point?
Yes.
Oh, Herman, then, guys, shame.
Before you go there, it's always a challenge when you come into confessions and warning statements that people made.
Mm.
I mean, we have seen several cases whereby we have a confession and then someone says later, no, I was forced to confess. So it starts from that age whereby those ones have the mind or ability to say, yes, I did it, and they are aware of their thing.
Mm.
And then even this one confessed to say, yes, I did it. But then in court, you need to prove beyond reasonable doubt that this person actually did confess to us. So it might be a challenge because they might say, okay, he's a minor. If you're saying he stole the sweets, he will say yes sometimes because he's scared of you. And well, so that one is a challenge, but we need to relook at the system as a country.
Because we can't wait until the third time somebody's raped and it's like, okay, we need to take it more seriously. And again, mind you, they only took it more seriously because he was 14 when he did the third rape. So obviously I feel like there definitely needs to be some kind of reform. And I feel like also he could have gone for psychic evaluation. He could have definitely gone for psychic.
At the first incident,
he could have definitely gone for psychic evaluation. There should have been more than just a social worker appointed to look after him. There should have been more done. But you know what? We move and we learn. And hopefully the readers also understand that we are just reporters.
Can you repeat that?
We get emails, guys. Haven't got an email on how whether or not somebody should be proud of a 15-year sentence.
And I'm not even proud about it. I'm just giving you the information to say, hey, guy, be aware of this thing. It's happening. And then someone chooses to insult me as if I'm the prosecutor or the judge or the kid who did that. I mean, I'm just giving you the information so that you can know that in South Africa, this thing. But actually, I'm happy that it shows that people are reading our stories, people are learning from our stories, and they are making a valid point of view and they are engaging, you know, they are debating about it. So
I mean, it's an interesting case, I think, and I think I'd like to say that he is, so far from records, that he is the youngest serial killer that we have in serial rapist. Yes. So now moving on to killers again. Oh, Herman was working on a trial this week, guys. Oh, Sibusiso Mahlangu and his wife Lerato conspired to kill Sibusiso Sithebe to benefit financially in January 2022. Herman, please give us a little bit of background on that.
So first and foremost, the what's the newspaper? The Daily Sun.
Yeah.
They call them a local Thabo Bester couple because of the nature. Because we know obviously Thabo Bester to escape, they killed someone and banned him.
Yeah.
So even this one, for this guy, for them to benefit financially, allegedly, because they have not been found guilty, they did the same thing. So the state had just presented their case. According to the state, they say these two conspired to kill the boyfriend who was a side man, the wife.
Okay.
So on the 1st of January 2022, the guy found out, hey Joe, my wife is having an affair with someone else. So they went to a family lunch, and then when they came back, the lady was supposed to go to Mpumalanga for work. She works at Old Mutual. And apparently the finances that she gained after the funeral are from Old Mutual because she had a policy there. So the state saying, okay, sharp, you went to a family lunch and then you came back, and then this guy came, and then that's when you met this guy, and the wife was not there, but then you escaped, and then later on, what's funny is that, okay, I need to put this there.
Yeah, you are definitely all over the place.
Okay, I need to put this, okay. So, according to the state, this guy was arrested for a stolen vehicle.
The husband.
Mahlangu.
Okay.
Yeah. Mahlangu, after being arrested for a stolen vehicle, when he was profiled, questioned, they discovered that he was dead. And then apparently he confessed to the police that, you know what, actually, me and my wife, we faked my death. We killed the man, we banned him, and we got insurance money. So according to the confession, he's saying that I found out that my wife was having an affair with Ustebe, and then later on this guy came to my house. I don't know what he wanted at the time. And then we started to fight, and then I overpowered him.
Mm.
He collapsed, and then I bent him and then escaped.
Mm.
And then, yeah. So after the confession, he was arrested.
Did, yeah.
So the state presented their case to say, yeah, we arrested him for a stolen vehicle, and then we got a confession from him.
Yeah.
This is what he said. And then now it's time for defense to present their case by proving their innocence.
Mm.
So the guy basically is saying, I know nothing, and it's disappointing that you will think that I can kill for a mere 575,000. So this guy is like arguing that he didn't do it, and the confession
was coerced.
He was forced. He was threatened that he will be arrested.
I don't, and I've never done things how other people do. I do things in my own unique way. And if you are gonna ask me questions and expect me to be in line and to do things how generally a person would do them, unfortunately, all the answers that I'm gonna give you, they're gonna be wrong. If I was gonna go to my mother, I was gonna go to my mother at whichever point that I go to my mother. As for to say why did I not go to my mother at that time, I don't know why I did not go, but I did not go.
So yesterday, the lady took the stand, and she's basically saying, "Nah, I didn't know anything. I thought my husband was dead."
So when she was, when they were having the funeral, she thought the person in the casket, and that one that was going down into the ground, was her husband.
That's what she's saying. But what's funny is that the state says the body wasn't banned beyond recognition,
so she could be able to identify him.
And she's the one who identified the guy as Mahlangu. And the family of Mahlangu in court said that this lady didn't want them to see the deceased.
Wow, that's a lot of, that's fishy. That is fishy on another level.
We'll see.
But
and this guy now, he has attitude in court. He says, it's disappointing that I can, you think I can kill for that amount.
But I think, Vele, people have, I've noticed that there's been an attitude with like, with attitudes in courts. And I don't think it's also helpful that we, the media, give these people the accessibility for them to have these attitudes and, you know, to portray them. Like, you look at Thabo Beste. Thabo Beste can not only advocate for himself, which obviously is his right, but he not only advocates for, but he stands now on trial and says, no, it's, I have constitutional rights to this, and this. But my guy, you raped and killed and burned somebody's body to replace you in a cell, and you want to still advocate about how you have constitutional rights. It does not make sense at all. And so that's like, I feel like the attitude now has become so complacent. You even look at it with the Senzangakhona trial. You look at it with the lawyers in the Senzangakhona trial. The lawyers there are not the very... lawyers are not really, you know, I don't know how to say, honorable. They're not really honorable. So, like, there's just a behavior in the courts that has seemed to lose it. And also, the media does not, it's not helping by portraying it. I mean, you also look at Mbor.
I mean, it's no longer a formal... Sorry, it's no longer a formal debate. We are taking it to a street debate. I mean, in the street, when we argue, even insults come flying about this attitude to drive your point.
Exactly.
And sometimes you're not even making sense. But
exactly.
Then you're shouting and you're thinking you're making sense. Which is wrong, by the way, Obo.
But it is what it is. At the end of the day, I mean, if the state can still prove that Umgai... not only did he lie about him dying, but he killed another person as well on top of that. Yeah.
And then he's saying that, so they asked him in court, where were you for a whole year? Because you were not around until you got arrested. I just needed to find myself.
Find himself where exactly? That's also my thing as well. So with the police, in regards to situations like this, so they just... Like, they just accept it. Yeah, Oshwele, and the wife says, yeah, that's the burden, and that's it. Case closed.
It's quite questionable because the body was not banned beyond
recognition. That's my chat as well. So they could be able to identify him.
Yeah.
But yet there was no identification. This is what we're also always talking about in regards to cases that Mapodi said that go to court and then they're not properly investigated.
Sometimes they screw up.
It probably could have been a tight case. But somehow they got lazy or something happened and now we're sitting with a case that might fall apart if one thing happens.
Talking about police, yesterday I was watching Skim GP podcast. So as I was watching a GP podcast, there's this guy, Bati, it's Wandile. So he's from KZN. So this guy basically is telling a story of how he was involved in what he thought was hijacking. And then they hijacked the car, they ran away. And then when they got to their destination, they realized the group that he was with came with the victim, who is the owner of the car. And he was like, hey, Joe, nah, I'm not a murderer, I'm not a kidnapper, so I'm not going to be part of this. So it's either you release her, because we have the car. We wanted the car.
I never get those kind of kidnappings.
So he threatened them to say, I'm going to the police to report you. And then Vele, he went and he sat in the police station, looking at police frustrated as they are trying to find the car that he stole.
So I was about to say, so he went to the police frustrated over a car he stole.
Yeah. So when they say over, close the main road, the car might pass there. He knows, the car is not going to pass there because the car is parked somewhere. He's sitting like listening to the police. And they could have, like, maybe if they acted in time and attended to him, because he said no one attended to him while he was sitting there. So if they had attended to him in time, they could have saved their life.
Yeah.
But they were busy. Others were busy with their things. I mean, we know our police station when you go there.
My problem is, I realize that every time we have a podcast, we always talk about the police. We always talk about the police and how there's something wrong with the police. I mean, you look at the situation in Lusukisik, Eastern Cape. I think they said that they were 15 minutes away. And yet, in a situation like that, 18 people died, and they only probably arrived probably like an hour or two after the matter. Do you know what's funny? Let me tell you a funny story. Me and my family, me and my sisters, we were in, how would I call it, like a serious situation where there were knives and everything, and we were actually going to get stabbed. And so my sisters, they called the police. We called the police. The police.
The police don't police.
Guys, the police go, no, you need to call your station. I'm like, okay, but can you not transfer me to my station, the nearest station to me? They're like, no, you need to find the number of your station and call your station. We can't do it for you. Our lines are down. But yet you're answering my phone. The lines are down and you're answering my phone.
I know the experience. I mean, this year, my mom, there was an attempted robbery at my mom's place. And then this guy broke the locker. And then my mom spent the whole Saturday trying to call the police to say, come, if you need to take fingerprints, come and take the fingerprints. And they only came on Saturday evening. Sunday evening, I mean, the following day. And they were like, no, we'll patrol. Hey, chief, guys, what do you want today? Like, the incident was yesterday. What do you want today?
I never understand why are you here? Them. I really never understand the way police work. It's like, you know the mandate to protect and to serve. But when are they like to protect and to serve at our own time?
It depends on who you are.
Yeah, it depends on who you are. And if you don't have a status, I mean,
we have to give them credit. I mean, Dunga, the Gauteng EFF provincial he allegedly there was an attempt to assassinate him, and the police acted fast.
But you just said to my brother, Udunga EFF, like literally high profile.
I don't want to discredit his information. The handsome thing allegedly.
Me, let's leave it there, man. Honestly, because okay. you literally just proved the point that we were making. But let's move on, guys. So speaking of the police, right? So the police have been making, guys, they've been making, wow, I can't believe I'm actually about to praise them. They've been making busts at the OR Tambo in regards to drug mules. And apparently they've been also working with the Border Management Authority, because obviously get the posts. So they've been saying that the Border Management says, no, for the past 2 months, they've seen 11 drug mules come through that airport. And obviously at that point, it was a matter of, is this concerning? Is it not concerning? So when you spoke to Athlenda Mate from SAPS, she says, no, actually, the number has gone down. She says before COVID, they would have 40 drug mules coming through the SA port.
What?
Yeah, 40 drug mules, cool. You know? And then after that, she goes, no, but in the past few months, it's actually been quite small. But she says the problem is that the number is decreasing, but the quantity that these girls are holding has actually increased.
Yeah.
I think it's not shocking, but for the mere fact that we are encouraged that, remember, criminals are becoming more and more creative and innovative in how they transport these drugs.
Mm.
Like at our sea ports, they bring them in disguised in meat boxes, right?
Yeah.
So they pack them amongst other meat, go chicken, go in. So what is encouraging to us is that our intelligence is still able to detect and pick up.
Yeah.
You know, so it says to you that police are hard at work at all the ports of entries throughout the country, actually.
Yeah.
You know, there's this determination by police. These drug traffickers or these drug whoever, they utilize the vulnerable victims, you know?
Yeah.
Someone that they can use at that time. Vulnerable and who's easily coerced.
Oh, okay.
But also, I think what also is disturbing, obviously, it's either these girls are in it from the beginning, they know about it, but some claim that they are duped into, they are scammed into this whole thing because they are taken overseas by these guys on a pretense that they are, you know, going on holiday and whatever. And when they get there, it's like, do this for me. So obviously we look at, I mean, if you look at these, the recent drug bust, they are all coming in from Sao Paulo, Brazil, and South America. That is why the national commissioner met with the commissioner of the Brazilian Federal Police, and he raised this concern. And from that meeting last year in Europe, a team was established to work together on this.
I mean, you look at the girl with the 21-year-old girl who she ingested them. Yeah. She was not even, you know, holding them in the bag. She ingested them. And they said that thing she had, how many was it?
I think 100.
100 pills or something like that. And it's like, imagine if one of those pills burst in you.
Two.
Guys, I don't think I could handle that much amount of stress. Eh? To think for one wrong move.
And I think she broke the record. I think so.
We'll just confirm that for you guys. Yeah. But because it's very shocking. So and my editor and I worked on a project on drug mules, and we were speaking to drug mules who, well, former drug mules. Let me just make sure I say former.
Yeah.
Former drug mules who basically have basically been arrested in situations where they never thought they'd be in. So one of them was a South African man who basically thought that he was going to Hong Kong for a job. And it was a thing out. He trusted this guy who came to his church saying that, no, I want to seek a new life through God.
And it's in church. And you never think about it.
And you wouldn't think this guy would come to church and would try to, you know, scam me or like make me believe that I'm going to be involved in drugs. No, jiggy jiggy. Few months passed by. the guy's like, oh, actually, he disappears for a time being, and then he comes back. When he comes back, he's like, no, I went to Hong Kong. Yo, I did this great job for my boss. Set up computers, and I'm going back. Do you want to come back with me? Mm. The guy's like, well, sure. You know, I trust you. You've been here changing your life, and it seems as if your life is changing. So let me tag along. And he's like, I also wanted to travel because I've never traveled out of the country. So let me travel. No, my guy goes, right? And the entire time, it's a matter of, no, he wants to now start packing for the trip. So this guy keeps saying, no, it's fine. Don't worry. Your luggage is arranged. Don't worry. When I must just come. Just come. Bring yourself. So fine. The day comes. A car comes to pick them up. They give him a bag and it's full of clothes. And he's like, are these mine? He's like, yes, those are your clothes and this is your bag. You just take it and then we're going to head to the airport. They head to the airport, guys, OR Tambo, and he says they went through no problems at all. It was only when they reached to Hong Kong airport. He says out of 70 people that were on that plane, that were getting off that plane, the police only pointed him out and said, you over there, come here. And like he says, okay, me, I didn't think anything deep.
Yeah, I have nothing.
You know, he's like, I'm not guilty of anything. So he's sitting in the chair, minding his own business, and he's watching the police go through his bag. But he's like noticing how they keep calling him. They keep calling other police to come and see. So he now starts getting nervous. What are they seeing? All I have is clothes. Yeah. So they're like, no, my brother, come over here. Let's show what we're seeing. No shame, guys. Gets there, they open the bag. They're like, what is this? He is shocked. He sees like kilos, like I don't know how to explain it, guys. You see in the movies when they say they stack. He says there were stacks of bags of drugs that he could not explain. And when they asked him, where did this come from? He says, I have no idea. And he was arrested.
He wanted to do a small job overseas. He was in Hong Kong. I'm like, wow. He said, yeah, man, I told you I was to be an IT. He said, I know a lot about IT and computers and stuff, so I had to go and set up computer systems, you know, for like same ledgers for call centers and things like in Hong Kong, whatever they're going to use for, and they set up all these computers in a big, you know, in a big place area, whatever. So I thought, okay, cool. And he said, that's what he's doing, but he has to go back. And he said, oh man, I can speak to my boss. I want to do something for you since you've helped me out for a month. You guys have helped me. Spoke to even to my bosses, and then I want to do something for you. And back and speak to my boss. Maybe you can come with me. I said, wow, that's too good to be true. Hong Kong, 5 days going to work. And it wasn't really about the money. For me, it was more about flying. I've never flied in my whole life. So for me, it was more about flying and going to another country. You understand what I'm saying? And then he's thinking about, you'll be more on holiday. I'm doing it for you. We'll do the work. And maybe sometimes you can run cables and these type of things. Help us when we set up the computers. You can bring the computers on. You know, maybe we'll, okay. No problem. But it sounded too good to be true, right? But it actually really happened. And yeah, that was it. And yeah, I was set up with cocaine, 2 kgs of cocaine, and the guys planted cocaine in a bag that was not mine. I had my own bag. They convinced me to take the bag. Told me, yeah, man, you're going overseas, your bag is so old. And I told him, no, I like my bag. He said, man, look, we can get you a new one. I'm like, no, it's okay. He said, oh, well, I was just asking. So he kept on doing that for a couple of times. And then what happened is I finally gave in. I said, okay, no problem. Bring me the bag. So before we flew, I asked him, hey, where's the bag? Ah, don't worry, the bag will come. I said, I'm on a bike, I can pack my stuff from my bag into the bag. I said, don't worry, be patient, the bag will come. Okay, no problem, I left it. I waited for him. This was in the hotel now. I said, okay, now I'll wait for it. I'm waiting, asked him again. He said, the bag will come. Okay, I just wait patiently. And then suddenly, another black guy came. The driver, well, I'm not using name, obviously Nigerian, he came and brought the bag in. Just suddenly, brought the bag, hey, come on, put it back. We're supposed to be at the airport at 12, right? We're leaving at 2. So there's around 11:30 in the afternoon. Put the bag on the bed, unzipped it. Say, oh, you know, we have to run. We're in a hurry up. So I just jumped. I'm like, oh, man, finally we are leaving. I jumped up, put my stuff in the bag, and yeah, and after that, I put it down, and inside was clothes also. He said, "Hey man, we have some clothes if you need, if you are, these are new clothes. If you are interested, there's some clothes here for you if you need it." I go, like, "Oh, okay, I check the size," and I said, "Yeah, it looks good. Okay, no problem, leave it in there." Just left it in the bag. I took the bag, put the bag down again. So I said, "Okay, let's go." Then I said, "Oh, no, relax. Wait, wait, so let's just wait." So we sat down waiting for like 5 minutes, and then suddenly, said, "Okay, let's go." So we left all the way to the airport. And that's when, yeah, we left with their bag, not my own bag. Mm. I had to transfer stuff from my bag into their bag. Mm. So I left, went to Hong Kong. So when I came into Hong Kong, and this bag passed passed through our airport, the same day. And when I came to Hong Kong, well, not Hong Kong, I was transiting Singapore, and there they catch you with drugs.
What a nice project you did with Lindile. I read it. I heard the one who Lindile did from a lady from Kebeha. So the lady, it's like a curse when they arrest you, because she's basically saying that I was envying the lifestyle my friend was living. I had 3 kids at the time. I needed to support them.
Mm.
So told me, oh, okay, hold us, hambe. Siya hamba. Slangana ne Nigeria and then Nigeria, tell guys soft life. Okay, shop Batamaya by I think it's Brazil. I'm not sure. Because in my mind now, so it's Brazil, because lately the pasta from Brazil.
It's Brazil. Mm.
So when they went shop Fede. And then when they came back, the friend was like, "Hey Joe, I'm going." Oh no.
That's the Seps one.
No, Lindile wrote it. The lady went to South Pole and then the friend went to Rio.
But when
and then they were supposed to meet in South Pole, ne? And then this one told her, "No, I'm no longer coming that side, but there's a bag that I need you to come back with. And then the lady kept on calling to say, "Are you okay?" So, no, you think it's a friend checking up on you, Obo? And then you tell her, "No, I had passed through the entrance." Okay, good luck.
Good luck.
So, as she was sitting in the airport, inside the airplane, police come and show her
picture. That's the story I wrote. Hey, man, I'm realizing you're talking about the story of the police officer. So this woman was a previous police officer. She was literally a SEPs member go Cleveland. And this woman is like, "I want to go to Brazil to go by hair."
I'm mixing details.
Yeah, definitely mixing the details.
But then there's a lady from Kebeha also. It's on our...
It's on the page, guys.
Okay, confirming the details of the 21-year-old, she released about more than 110
bullets. That's a lot.
And SAPS are saying that's the highest number they have seen in 8 years.
Which is consistent with what Ahlinde was saying. I think now they're packing more guns than they usually do. Like they would, you know, they would stuff them more. And an interesting thing then also an MPO says that, you know, these drug mules are actually not the real drug mules. It's actually they are decoys. So they would actually be like, for example, the one with the SAPS woman who was on the plane and she got arrested for federal officials. She says that in a situation like an Angel's one, there was another drug mule on that same plane. But the police never found that drug mule because they got distracted by Angel. And she says these people who recruit you or your so-called friends who take you on that side, they would circulate your picture to the police. They would give you a picture. So they can pass you. So literally, they would give your picture, what you're wearing, to the police and say, "This guy is wearing drugs." Because,
the police said, "I'm only homeless." Sorry, I'm not laughing, but yeah, it's quite concerning.
No, but yes, the police said it's 9, half the time it's women, but the MP also said that half of the time it's also, they also do get cases out from overseas from men, but most of them are actually in Mauritius, which is also just also weird.
I think we should just cut ties. I think we should cut ties with Brazil because
We can't trust. I think what we should do is probably do like a visa thing, because the thing is, with when you go to Brazil, you don't need a visa, which makes it easier. I think it's the same thing with Thailand and certain other countries. You don't necessarily, South Africans don't necessarily need visas to other places, but it has like a pro and con thing with this whole visa problem. That's the problem.
But then
understand?
We are intrigued.
Let
me not touch the topic, because
it is what it is. But guys, be careful. I think what I've learned up in this past, literally past week, and just writing these stories, is that be careful of the people around you, especially people who just all of a sudden just came in your life
and be nice.
Yeah, and all of a sudden are nice and talking about how Brazil, and like, look out for these countries: Brazil, Thailand, Nigeria, Ghana.
Friends, I'm actually lucky that I don't have friends who I call friends. I have people I know that
you've
see
grown up
now
with.
I don't have friends, because friends always catch you in trouble.
Yeah, there's always those sketchy ones. But guys, but let's move on to a lighter note, guys. Yo, guys, see, Chris Breezy. It's also controversial. But Oksalayo, for the people of Mzansi, they don't seem to see it that way. So, Chris Breezy, guys, Chris Brown has a concert in South Africa, and his first show, literally, I think it was December 14th.
It's December 14th.
December 14th has sold out. Was sold out in just 2 hours of the tickets going on sale.
I thought we were all complaining
because he's a GBV. You know, he's an abusive person. Yeah. But now people are lying and they're buying his tickets. And I mean, I think even Women for Change had a petition up saying that they want to boycott his performance. But South Africa, it seemed as if South Africans were not getting that memo. They wanted to see Chris Brown perform so much that he added a second date.
I mean, a conversation of GBV and everything, it's quite interesting and it's quite sad also, because recently there was a reveal that Casper was cheating.
Yeah.
And then I saw a lady posting a TikTok video saying that, you know what, let him try to fill up the dome again. We'll show him. And then other people were like, "Hey, Joe, we are not there. You are alone there. We are not part of it."
I think I had a conversation with a few of my editors and colleagues around the office, and it was a matter of, guys, as much as we'd like to boycott abusers, right, there is still music. Their music is still kind of, it's, I mean, like, okay, let's take it back to R. Kelly.
Yeah.
R. Kelly, we all know what R. Kelly did. But people are still listening to R. Kelly music even right now.
Yeah.
People are still listening to what he does. And I think a lot of people were arguing that you guys want to boycott Chris Brown, but you don't boycott your favorites in South Africa. You don't boycott.
It's always the case.
You don't boycott your people.
On who you are.
It depends on who you are. And because he had your favorite, Rihanna, now you are upset. And like, you know, and the thing is, again, I'm not a woman, I'm not an abuser, forgiver, whatever it's called. But I'm just saying, let's look at it entirely in one bubble, right? This is a guy who, guys, Chris Brown's office, half of the time people actually consider him a legend. Me, I don't consider him a legend. That's too far. But there are people who say, no, Chris Brown is a legend. So you'd expect South Africans to pass by a chance to see Chris Breezy. When was the last time he was here? I think they said 2010. Not, was it before that?
2009,
2009.
That's
and
when
even,
the incident happened.
And even, but even before that, he still had a large following. And even now, it's a large following. So honestly, I'm saying, you know what? People who bought the tickets, enjoy them. You know, 3,000, 7,000. But you know what? You love it. If you love it,
you like it.
Forever Chris Brown way. Enjoy the concert, guys, and have fun. But just keep in mind, you know, GBV in South Africa is real. So
yeah, it's bad.
It's very, very bad. But you know what? Hopefully, maybe he gets here. Maybe he'll do a sentence on an apology. I don't know, but we'll see what he says. But anyway, guys, that's all for this week's news wrap. Remember that you can find our latest podcast, review, and subscribe for free on Iono FM, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. You can also find us or follow us on all social media platforms at So It's Alive. This podcast is a Times Live production and our producer is Demi Buzoa. Don't forget, you can also have a listen to our other podcasts, Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horn, Business Day Spotlight, Gogo Have I Been Scammed, and 30 Years of Democracy. Thank you for tuning in. Join us again next week for more updates on the biggest stories from me, Gwena, and my colleague Herman. Bye.
Bye.